Hello, party people. Oh, I got to turn off my audio manually. What is this? What year is this? There we go. All right, done. Hello, party people, and welcome to Office Hours, the live stream where I hear your Microsoft Azure or SQL Server questions and then chat with you about the answers. Hello there, Daniel. Den as well says hi. Posicky says hi. First time chat. Welcome to the show. And then also Morse said, I bet y'all wish y'all had Oracle stock. For those of you who aren't aware, Oracle went up 35%, I think, in one day after OpenAI signed a contract with them for $300 billion worth of compute, I think starting in 2027. But $300 billion worth of compute. I don't remember how many years that's over, like if it's a five-year time span or 10-year time span. But for perspective, $300 billion is more than OpenAI makes in a year, and they're going to spend that much just on compute with Oracle. They are lighting money on fire. There's just an amazing arms race these days in between these AI companies. Mr. Greater Than says, I don't get out of bed for less than $400 billion worth of compute. Yeah, that's incredible to me. So Oracle, the company's stock went up 35% in one day. I have a friend of mine who works at Oracle, and he's all excited because he's going to go buy his favorite Porsche now. DK Kimbo, good to see you again. Thanks for the ongoing subscription. He's been subscribed for 12 months. Those of you who have Amazon Prime, you get a totally free Twitch subscription. And that so that means you can go to Twitch, sign in with your Amazon account. It's totally free. It doesn't cost you anything. And then you can subscribe to streamers. And then that way you don't have to see the ads. Whenever ads come in on my stream, you just don't see them at all anymore. DK Kimbo says, I'm doing double duty listening to Kevin Klein talk in a webinar and hanging out here. Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't know Kevin was doing a webinar right now. Kevin's always fun to listen to. I used to work with Kevin way back in the day over at Quest Software. So let's go take a look at your top voted questions from over at PollGab. Let's see, the top voted question asked from Demanding Brent's Attention asks, are you aware of any solutions to run Management Studio from Linux or Unix? So to purely run SSMS, not natively on those platforms, if your job is to do database administration on those platforms, you have a few options. My personal favorite is just to use a jump box, have a VM up and running somewhere in your data center with Windows on it, and then you remote desktop into there. I prefer doing my database administration from that because that way, if I have something that needs to go running for a while, then that way it doesn't matter if my laptop goes to sleep or if I disconnect, I need to go home, my VPN connection drops, anything like that. I'm going to know that my, oh my God, Daniel, thanks for the hype train here. Holy smokes. But then I know that way it'll work regardless. So Daniel just gifted 5 tier 1 subscriptions to the people out there in the channel. That's very cool. So Yolanda, Morse, MTM King, Loberg, and Richie, all of you are tuned in. You should say thank you to Daniel for the gift subscription. That's very nice of him. Thank you, Daniel. And then I think, Richie says, Brent says VM in the data center when I just clicked start it on an EC2 instance. I did too this morning. I just started an EC2 instance this morning, and I'm running Management Studio in there to do demos. The other thing you can do is you can run locally a VM. So I use Parallels locally on my own laptop. And then that way I can run Windows applications inside of there. Yet another way that you can do it is to use utilities other than Management Studio. For example, you can use DataGrip, you can use DBeaver. There are a ton of applications out there that are cross-platform. They don't have all the cool management stuff that Management Studio has. It doesn't have things like an availability groups wizard, for example. But if you're proficient with T-SQL and you prefer managing that way, you totally can. Otherwise, it's just Windows is the only game in town for that one. Microsoft did put out in SSMS 22, the first preview of it just came out, and they've put in the roadmap that they're working on ARM support, ARM processor support. That does not mean Linux ARM processor support. It means Windows on ARM processor support. So like those latest fancy Microsoft laptops that run with ARM processors and last a lot longer time. G-Surgeon, shout out to the Netherlands there. Let's see, what do we got next? Data Beard Administrator says, I've been tasked with building my first data warehouse. I've got goals like adding temporal columns and updating reports to use date ranges. Any tips on getting started with data collection and ETL? Any personal favorite tools or books you like? So the challenge with that is that the art of ETL has changed a lot in the last 2 to 3 years. In the last 2 to 3 years, the industry has been moving towards serverless solutions, stuff where you only pay by the compute cycle while your ETL jobs are running. So things like Microsoft Azure Data Factory and Amazon Glue. Because those tools are so relatively recent, and because there's no money in the book business anymore, that I could go on for quite a while about how bad that is. Because of that, unfortunately, you're going to have to skip the book thing, and you're going to have to read the documentation. I know, right? You really don't want to read the documentation, but that is what you're going to be doing. DK Kimbo says, I just hit 12,000 query bucks in this channel. I've been meaning to do something with those query bucks things for a while. Been meaning to do like custom emotes and things like that. So it's kind of, I should do that one of these days. One of these days. Let's see. Next up, Wrapped the Tenga says, do you ever see distributed availability groups at all? Not even work on, just see. No, I don't. But remember, it's because I have that weird consultant job where I do performance tuning. I focus on performance tuning. And generally, companies that are large enough to have distributed availability groups, that's a really complex infrastructure that breaks a lot. Generally, companies that do that tend to have teams of database administrators, like 5-10 database administrators. And so they tend to not hire outside consulting help just because they can afford to have a whole lot of people on staff full time to troubleshoot stuff. Next up, Karen from IT asks, should database administrators even care about normalization anymore when storage is cheap and SSDs are fast? That's an interesting question. I don't know that database administrators ever really cared about normalization, because normalization is something that needs to happen long before the database actually goes into production. It's something that's done more by database developers. And database developers still totally need to care about normalization, because it makes your app building process easier. If you can have normalized tables, it'll work more easily with Entity Framework. It'll work more easily with ORMs that automatically generate your queries for you. So that helps you a lot there. Not even about performance as much, it's just easier development. DK Kimbo says, I have not met that many DBAs that would be considered normal. Yeah, no, we're usually pretty far out there in terms of weirdness. That's one of those things you notice when you start going to a conference. You're like, oh man, some of these people are really bizarre and not usually friendly. I just earned a hype chain emote. Oh, spilling the tea. Oh, we have a new spilling the tea emote in the channel. Oh, that's kind of cool. Next up, let's see here, we have I'm Trying, who says, our company is pushing us to Amazon, including all databases like SQL Server and Oracle. Obviously, I'm still learning, but is RDS for SQL Server a good idea? If your company has chosen Amazon, like if your company has made an executive level decision that we're going to Amazon, and if you have SQL Server databases, then I think AWS RDS for SQL Server is a really good idea, because it reduces the workload that isn't sexy. Nobody gets amazing raises for doing things like backups or patching. You know, these are things that are considered necessary evils by the administration. by your management administration. I mean, they're considered necessary evils. So the more you can save time not doing those, I'm all about it. And so that you can focus on things that the business sees as valuable. And then that way, Amazon RDS takes care of the really crappy stuff, the stuff you don't really want to do. Next up, online transaction procrastinator says, I want to move my 4-node availability group to fast local storage. This means losing the ability to offload corruption checks with SAN snapshots. Is there any other good way to offload them? Oh yeah, of course. So whatever your primary is, and then you got your three other nodes, you can run CheckDB on those other nodes on their current storage. There's no reason that you can't. Now, does it slow things down? Sure. But if those replicas weren't being used anyway, who cares? Now, if you undersize the replicas so much that they're smaller than the primary, then yeah, you could have performance problems. But as long as there's the same size as the primary, and you just said you were worried about failing over to that node, as long as it's the same size as the primary, and as long as it's not dealing with any read transactions at the moment, you should be able to offload CheckDB there just fine. And you're give it a shot by all means so that you can test it and see. DK Kimbo says, oh, hi, HL Car, welcome to the club. DK Kimbo says, don't we want to run CheckDB wherever we're taking backups? My general advice is that you want to run it wherever, whatever node you take the backups on, and whatever node you would fail over to. So those two things in combination. Maybe it's the same box, maybe it's a different box, because you can't offload your backups to another replica. Wherever you take your backups and wherever you want to fail over to, you should run CheckDB on those. There you go. Next up, my tea got cold. Says, any advice for dealing with Tableau in particular? My users swear to me that they have no control over the queries that it generates. Really, there are only three things that we can do in order to improve performance on SQL Server. I think of it as like three dials that we can turn. There's the hardware dial, the query dial, like how we design our queries, and the index dial, how we store our data. That's it. Those are the only three dials that we get. And reporting tables, to me, fall over the index dial, or fall into the index dial. So if you tell me that you can't touch the query dial, that just leaves you two other dials, the hardware dial and the indexing dial. Those are what your choices are. And you may have to invest more if you tie off one of those dials and say you can't touch it. Next up, let's see here. Junior DBA says, we take care of multiple customers' database servers. When we inherit servers within the company, or the customer comes to our company and they migrate here, what kind of checklist should we go through before accepting the handover? Run SP Blitz. That's the first place that you start. SP Blitz is my open source health check that I wrote for that exact reason. People would bring me SQL servers, and I was like, what is this god-awful mess? Run SP Blitz, go dump that out into Excel and start going through there, talking with them, saying, talk to me about each one of these options. And then that way you can only accept the servers that you're comfortable with there. Pete says, what is your favorite event to go to these days? Usually it's Bits, SQL Bits over in the United Kingdom. SQL Bits does an amazing party on Friday night. So it's a conference that there's paid days like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then Saturday is a free day of the conference. Friday night before the free day is this big party where all kinds of people come in. They wear costumes based on whatever the theme is. It's a great way to spend time with database professionals outside of the normal conference type thing and like relax and have a good time. Last year it kind of sucked because they did it at a kind of like a Dave and Buster's arcade thing. But unfortunately the capacity of the event wasn't large, or the capacity of the venue wasn't large enough, and the air conditioning wasn't large enough. It wasn't like powerful enough. Well, the UK was having a serious heat wave at the moment. Next year, they're doing it in a different place that's designed to be more isolated instead of London, so that it's easier to like dedicate everybody there, to have the parties and the pub quiz stuff there, to have it properly air-conditioned, to have enough space and things like that. Next up, Partitioning Pete says, is table partitioning actually worth it in real-world workloads? Oh, Daniel, thanks for subscribing. Actually worth it in real-world workloads, or is it just a resume-driven feature that nobody really needs anymore? So it's only worth it under two scenarios. One scenario is called sliding window loads, where you load in an entire partition at a time and you drop an entire partition at a time. Table partitioning can make your loads go faster with less downtime for the end users. The other place that it can be useful is if you want to design different data structures for the different periods of time or the different partitions. Like if you want clustered column store for old parts of the data, and then you want just a heap for the brand new parts of the data or whatever different things you want to do. Technically, that's not table partitioning. Technically, the thing you're looking for there is called partitioned views. But most of the time when people come to me and say that they want table partitioning, what they really want is partitioned views instead. I say most of the time when they come to me, it's because they already have partitioning installed and they're configured. And they're like, my queries still suck in terms of performance. And we look at the partitioning strategy and I'm like, yeah, you chose the wrong partitioning strategy and it really wouldn't be any faster. You could just do indexes and it would be faster than this. And then they get really pissed off. But hey, let's see. Next up, My Coffee Got Cold says, why do the run dates in SQL Agent Job Activity Monitor show MMYYY format? In terms of the why, I'm not really good at answering why questions. I've never worked for Microsoft. I've never been on the inside. I don't know what their project management decisions were. I don't know why they do the things that they do. If you find yourself asking why a lot, you should consider going to work for Microsoft. And that sounds like a sarcastic answer, but it's not. Microsoft hires people like you, not exactly like you, usually a little better looking than you, but hires people like you all the time. Go check out. They have this big comprehensive career site. Get in there. And then once you're in, it's easier to jump around from one place to another. But they hire people for support. They hire people for customer sales engineering, all kinds of job titles. So go check that out. And then you learn why. And then the downside is you can't usually talk about it, but at least you've satisfied your curiosity and you can go do things like look at the source code. That's not for me, but whatever. DK Kimbo says that's assuming Microsoft knows why, or it assumes that someone wrote down why and that you can find it, that they weren't like ashamed to know why, or that it wasn't an accident, because that happens a lot too as well. SQL Buddy says, I have multiple SQL Server instances on one cluster. They have analysis services, reporting services, etc. Is there an easy way to have it working in disaster recovery? Only move these services to separate machines in VM and buy new licenses? So generally, when you have complex stuff, like a bunch of services installed on a server, whether it's a cluster or not, when you've got a bunch of things installed on a server, the easiest way to do disaster recovery is just to fail the whole server over there. That's where you start doing VMs and you replicate the whole disk, like you replicate it all on shared storage, or you rely on replication at the VMware level. But that's usually the easiest way to do it. You said, is there an easy way? So that's the easy way. You look at VM replication. Also, SQL Buddy asks, My SQL Buddy says, my company has a 25 terabyte data warehouse. All the jobs only exist on the primary node. What's the easiest way to have it replicated in the case of failover and working with minimal impact on business? So now when you start talking about 25 terabytes, you're in the top 1% of the top 1% of SQL servers out there. You're so niche, like what, even beyond 3 terabytes, you're getting pretty niche. And you're also beyond the scope of what you can just like bang out a question on Reddit and have someone give you good advice. They'll give you advice, it just may not be good. Making the wrong decision at 25 terabytes is hella risky. So this is the area where you generally call in a consultant who does that kind of thing. And I am not saying that because I'm a consultant who does that kind of thing, because I don't do disaster recovery for 25 terabyte data warehouses. You would want to call in a consultant who does that kind of thing, who has a track record of doing it with multiple clients, you want to ask them about their thought process. Like, what are the things that you think about when you're designing a disaster recovery solution for this? You're not going to ask them to do the work for you. You're just going to say, what are the things that you're going to consider when you're building this? And their answers will immediately either give you warm, fuzzy feelings about their capabilities or give you the creeps. Like, oh, this person doesn't really know what they're going to talk about. And then that way you can make a decision on which one of them you're going to hire, because it is hard to find people with hands-on expertise at that level. Most of the people that you're going to find are kind of winging it. And let's see here. SQL Clueless says, we're working on a problem where user store token perm memory clerks balloons out of control. I've read your post about this, and I periodically free this memory using an agent job. Have you heard of any new solutions to this issue? Nope, not at all. As far as I know, that is still the way that that is. What you may want to do is do more root cause analysis on your code to find out what's causing the creep. For example, one of the customers that I worked with had accidentally left a grant permission statement in one of their stored procedures, and it was continuously running that grant permissions check thousands of times per minute, and there was a memory leak involved with that code. But it'll be different for each case on why yours is ballooning. Chakra asks, what is the future of SQL DBAs? Man, if I knew the answer to that, I would be selling that directly, right? Like, I'd be, what is the future of? That's a really hard question to answer. I wish that we knew reliably what our future was going to look like in tech, but the only constant in tech is change. The tools that we use change, the tools around us change, the people around us change, the things we're asked to do change. If you're not comfortable with change, tech isn't really a great job for you. You want to go segue into something that's more static and never changing, like accounting. Oh, DK Kimbo says that's what Kevin Kline is talking about right now. And he says, spoiler alert, he doesn't know either. Yeah, nobody really has an idea on that. Dupinder says, in SQL Server 2019, is there a good way using the first responder kit or other tool to see which queries are consuming the most tempDB? Yes. If only there was a class about how I use the first responder kit. Class would probably be taught by me, I guess. And it'd probably be really expensive considering everything. No. You know what? Knowing how much I love you and how much I love the first responder kit, that class is free. It's free. It's free. Go to our site. Go to brentozar.com. Click training up at the top. The class is free. How I use the first responder kit. Go attend the class. Learn to use the tools that you use. Come on, get in there. Make that happen. Let's see here. Demanding Brent's attention. Good to see you in here live. Welcome to the class. Or not class, but I write SQL in Portuguese asks, you keep saying you shouldn't use linked servers, but when inner joins are required, I still need the data. I've solved most of it with data replication, but with some big tables, replication is not possible. What other solution would you recommend? So this is going to sound crazy, but it's time for you to move to a reporting server. You want to have, if you constantly find yourself needing to get data from multiple places, it's frequently referred to as a data warehouse, a place that stores everybody's data centrally. And it's typically updated periodically, like think once a night or maybe every 4 hours that data is pulled into a central location. Sometimes you can do it via log shipping. Sometimes you can do it via SQL Server's built-in replication. Sometimes you may need tools like SSIS or Azure Data Factory. But if you're like, I gotta have it all in one place, then that's what a reporting server is for. Sometimes people will say, but I can't. And at which point I go, let's take a look at your servers. If your servers are smaller than my laptop has like 24 CPU cores and 128 gigs of RAM. If your server is smaller than my laptop, then you probably want to look at upsizing your servers and maybe even considering centralizing them, putting the data all on one server. But otherwise, start with a reporting server and go from there. And then we'll do one more. Let's see. I will pick from the list. Oh, that's actually a good question. Parameter sneezing says, if option recompile solves parameter sniffing, why not just put it everywhere and be done with it? There actually are people who suggest that we should have a server level switch to just require option recompile, to just automatically recompile every query that comes in. Guy Glancer has a really good, it's a SQL Server presenter out of, I say presenter, he's a consultant, trainer, runs his own company. Out of Israel, who has a great set of presentations around parameter sniffing that actually advocates for that, that says we should have just a global switch for option recompile and recompile every query. The downside of it is as you get to more and more queries per second, when you get to say 100 queries a second, 500 queries a second, 1,000 queries a second, and beyond, then the overhead of building execution plans becomes so intense for SQL Server, especially when you have complex queries, that your CPU can go to 100%, and then you end up spending money for licensing and more CPU when you really have the same query plans every single time. So that's the big drawback, and I would be fine with saying, every query that it costs more than a certain amount of query bucks should be automatically recompiled. Like if, just like we have a cost threshold for parallelism, I think we should have a cost threshold for recompile. If the query costs more than an estimated, say, 1,000 query bucks, rebuild the plan every time it runs, because it's going to be real computationally intensive, and I want a really good plan for the particular parameters that we're using. I've asked for that a couple of times. I've put it in the Microsoft's feedback request thing, and it keeps getting either deleted every time they move to a new feedback platform, or it just never gets upvoted, so we'll probably never have that. Even the ones that I put in that do get highly upvoted, we don't get. I have one of the top 10 highest rated feedback items for years, which is that SQL Server should do CheckDB in the background. When it's idle for a certain number of seconds, it should go off and start doing CheckDB against different databases to just gradually go through and get caught up. Just like RAID controllers do. RAID controllers have been doing that for like 25 years, automatically patrolling the storage in the background. So it really makes sense for SQL Server to do it as well. Lots of people agreed. Microsoft's like, we'll take that under advisement. Crickets. I should have used the button for crickets. That would have been my perfect shot for that there. All right, so we've been going for quite a while there. I will go clear out the question queue so that people can ask fresh questions after this. And then I am going to go out. First thing I got to go do is go take my dog for a walk because it is gorgeous here in Vegas today. It is 75 degrees Fahrenheit, which is magical. This is like the first real day of fall. I think the high today is 90, which is totally fall for us. I had the windows open here at the house today, trying to like get fresh air in. It's really nice. So I'm going to go take our dog for a nice walk. And then after that, go back to work. Hopefully y'all had fun and learned something. I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.